Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is The Riverfront, episode number 426. Oh, my goodness. Number 426. I'm going to introduce each of you, but you got to start by answering this question. What are we going to do for episode number 500? It's inching ever closer. With me is the Godfather, Bill Lack.
Episode 500, it will be epic. We will have dancing girls, strippers, and Nate in a bikini.
We're going to have to start this one over. I'm not sure. We've already gone off the rails. I didn't introduce myself. I'm Chad. Kyle Farmer is the greatest player ever. Dotson. With me also this week is our buddy Nate Dotson. Nate, what's up?
You know, if our listeners and viewers are smart, there will not be an episode 500. But in case there is, you know, we don't have to wait that long for me to put on a bikini.
Oh. Yikes.
We will be using visual filters that evening.
I think what we need to do, really, honestly, all jokes aside, is we need to have a big live blowout somewhere in Cincinnati. I don't know where, but that's what we need to do. A live podcast event for everyone to show up. And Bill, start planning that.
So we're talking, we're what, 426? Is that what you said we were?
Yeah, we've got a little while.
We got 75 weeks. So, you know, sometime late next summer.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to still be verbal at that point.
No comment. Even if you are, you'll have so many beers by the time we get started with that thing that you'll be barely verbal. Let's talk about the Cincinnati Reds, gang. For the week, it was not a great week, but it ended up with a bang. Reds lost 2 out of 3 in Toronto. We'll talk about that a little bit more and the way they won the one that they won. And then they end up splitting with the Cubs at home by taking the last two games of the series. Culminating with today, we're obviously, as we always do, recording this on Thursday with an absolute slaughter of the Chicago Cubs, the stupid Cubs, as they're known around here.
I hate when we miss that extra point, though. I hate missing extra points.
Yeah, really. So what happened today was Kyle Farmer happened. Reds were down 3-0 going to the bottom of the second, put up 2 runs on the board. Kyle Farmer hit a 2-run homer, and then the Reds score 8 runs and sent 11 batters to the plate, and the game was over at that time. The last 5 runs of the game were scored against Pirates. Cubs shortstop Andrelton Simmons. Kyle Farmer ends up with going 4 for 4, 3 runs scored, 5 RBIs, 2 home runs. Tyler Stevenson, 3 for 5, 3 runs scored, 2 RBIs. Tommy Pham, 2 for 4, 3 RBIs. Some guy named Drury. Is that guy still around? 2 for 6, 3 RBIs. Nick Senzel, 4 for 4 with 2 walks. Reached base 6 times today at a leadoff spot.
Hope that's a starter, you know?
Absolutely. And Al Mora, 3 for 5 with 3 RBIs. Guys, what do you have to say about this big win today? This is what it kicks off the Reds, run to the pennant, right? Outstanding.
Yeah. I want to touch on something, though, that's kind of an offshoot of this. This is about Stevenson. And I haven't looked at the numbers, and this is something that just occurred to me. I don't know how many games he has not been in the lineup this year when he's been healthy, but it seems like he's out of the lineup more than he should be when he's healthy. It seems if he's not catching, he ought to be DHing, you know, especially if they got a left-handed hit. I don't care if he's left-handed or right-handed. And I'm not saying that, you know, guys got to play 162 games like they used to, because that's just not going to happen. And maybe because he catches, he needs more days off. Hey, smarter men than I would know that. But it just seems to me like he's out of the lineup more often than he should be when he's healthy.
You know, my Cincinnati Magazine piece this week was about whether the Reds should move Tyler Stevenson to another position to you know, protect him. And ultimately, I said no. But I found a quote from just last week. I saw a quote from David Bell. First of all, Tyler Stevenson says he doesn't want to move. And David Bell says, I don't want him to move, and we're also going to let him play DH on the days he's not playing. So I went and looked, and I think he'd only played DH like one time up to the time of that quote all season long. So I don't know what the exact numbers are, but they're not utilizing him as DH as much as they should. I mean, I don't know why he can't play 162 other than, you know, when he gets injured. But if when he's healthy every game, if you just play him, he can back up at first base. He can play DH. It doesn't make any sense to me. But, Nate, you can talk about the game or Tyler Stevenson or whatever you got on your mind.
Just quickly on the Tyler Stevenson thing. We know how important the catcher position is. It's right there in the book of Genesis. On the first day, the Lord created the catcher position. Day two, first base. He gave Tyler Stevenson an option on day two. Now, he was hung over one day and made the DH. We won't get into that. But
gosh, blasphemy.
Yeah,
don't blame.
Seems like
I got the DH.
I think this is the gospel according to Bill.
couldn't agree more with you guys. He needs that bat in the lineup as often and as creatively as possible. But you know, today's a good day to be a Reds fan. I was worried a few days ago when the Cubs took the first two games of the series that this, you know, instead of being something to build upon, it was going to be something that just sent this team into a downward spiral, you know, similar to the one that we've already had twice this year. But the Reds scored the most runs they've scored since 1999. You know, we're not going to get a lot of things to cheer for this season, and today is a good, good day.
So do you think they're partying like it's 1999?
I hope we're having more fun than that. Y2K was terrifying.
Y2K was right around the corner. Yeah, no, I mean, just, and today, crazy offensive explosion. The Reds, I'm sorry, the Reds are not going to score 20 runs every day. But I think that we can, I think there's a reason to believe that the offense, which has been horrible, the Reds are second to the last. Well, before today, they were second to last in the league in runs scored. They probably moved up the charts a little bit. But the offense has just been bad. But there's a lot of things coming together here right now. Kyle Farmer is back to being the greatest player in the history of the world. Joey Votto is back, my friends.
Ooh, baby.
Joey Votto's back. Stevenson's great. If Senzel starts hitting, I don't know. This all of a sudden, with just having Joey back and Tyler Stevenson back from injury changes everything about this lineup and the old Joey Votto. Nate, talk about Joey Votto a little bit about what we saw over the weekend and why I'm absolutely correct that he's back.
Well, I don't think that many people are going to argue with you whether they just don't want to because, you know, we have rose-colored glasses. We like to see the best of people. But that Toronto series, he had an extra base hit in every game. I think he only had one before he went on the injured list. So, that yeah, he's getting the barrel on the ball. He's still taking his walks. And then, you know, yesterday's game, or I guess it would be Wednesday's game, when people listen to this, he had another home run. He had a triple. Then he decided he was also going to start picking on rookie pitchers for the Cubs. Like, the guy is dialed in.
I don't know how you guys can say he's back. He didn't have a hit today.
You're right. He only got on base twice in five plate appearances.
Slacker.
No, Joey, as far as I'm concerned, Joey Votto's back. And, yeah, a little salty. The what's his name? Wick was the pitcher's last name for the Cubs. Evidently, he threw a high and tight on Votto, which I saw, and Votto wasn't pleased with that. And then after he walked Votto, they say he chirped at Votto a little bit. And so Votto went off on him. I thought he was going to charge the mound from first base. We've seen more of that from Votto this year than we've ever seen before. But two things, Bill. Number one, do you think Votto is back? Number two, give us your analysis of Hunter Green started the game today, and you watched his start.
Yeah, I did. I did on the Joey's thing first. I'm still not sold yet. I hope you guys are right. I want to see more than, you know, five games before I say he's back. But I think it's interesting though that he didn't have an extra base hit. I think he had like Nate said. I think he had one all season, and he, you know, quadrupled that or whatever in one series. So it makes you wonder if there was something going on earlier in the year, whether it be an illness, whether it be something bothering him, whatever. I hope he is. I hope he's back to being at least some semblance of the Joey we saw last year. Green today gave up five runs. I think he gave up all five. he wasn't getting any help from the umpire, at least early on when I was watching. All the borderline stuff was being called balls, and it was a lot of it was really close. His control today was not far off. We've said this a million times over the million years that we've been doing this. He's a young guy. He's going to have days when he's better than others. The two starts before this were phenomenal. I mean, you couldn't have asked any more. Did he struggle a little bit today? Yeah, he still got a win, you know, and he held him close enough for the Reds to come back and then to win the ballgame. And that's really all you want from your pitcher. Give me a chance to win.
Yeah, all I really wanted out of Hunter. Go ahead. Let me say quickly. Sure. All I wanted from Hunter Green today was for him to hold the Cubs to 19 runs, and he did that. So that's all we needed.
No, I think today was a good outing for his growth as a starting pitcher. He didn't have his best stuff. It looked like his off-speed stuff. He wasn't able to locate it quite as much. So he had to go to that fastball a little bit more than I think he wants to right now. And they've proven that major league hitters are going to hit that a long way if it gets the middle part of the zone. But he stayed in there. He battled. He got through five innings. Seems like when these outings were happening earlier in the season, these were 1-2-3 inning outings. We had, 6-7 of the bullpen. So I think that he showed a lot of poise. I think that it was, it's good for a guy his age's growth. And you're not going to go out there and pitch 6-7 innings of one earned ball every time. And just so y'all know, Joey Votto in the month of May has a 1.066 OPS.
There you go. What more do you want? Here's why I say just the last one.
Nate, how many games is that?
Because Don't ask questions nobody wants the answer to.
I'm just saying, because I'm pretty sure he's on the DL for a good portion of May. But
seven games, a full week's worth of results.
All right. Here's why I think he's back. Every single at bat, he's looked like the guy we saw last year. And in that Toronto series, when he hit the game-winning home run in the last game of the series in the eighth inning to put the Reds ahead, they ultimately won. That game, everyone talked about the home run, but earlier in the game, he hit two shots. Deep, they were outs, but they were, I think, his two highest exit velocity swings of the year. So he's starting to make better contact. I see no reason not to think he's not going to be what he was last year, maybe, but he's still going to be productive, I think.
Two things. One on Green, and I want to reiterate something I think I said last week. It's great that he can dial it up there seemingly to 100 miles an hour anytime he wants, but what's going to make him hit that ceiling that we're hoping he hits is that slider down in the strike zone. That's going to be the difference maker for him, I think, more often than the 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And I forgot what the other one was. It was something about Joey, though. The exit velocity thing. I think that tells you more than anything, than any of the numbers do, in terms of where the ball falls. If you're squaring the ball up on the bat, you're locked in, and they'll fall sooner or later. Some of them are not. Like you said, two of them went for outs. But give me a guy that's hitting the ball hard all over the ballpark. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, and yes, he's still hitting 156, as everyone on Twitter will let you know when you say something about him being good. But I don't know. I'm not worried about Joey Votto. Now, another guy that I have been worried about, and we've talked about a lot on this show, that I think we probably ought to discuss for just a moment, is Nick Senzel. Senzel, of course, is back here recently returned and has just been unbelievable in the field. I mean, his defense is gold glove worthy. It seems like every night he makes at least one play. That's a highlight reel play. I gotta be honest, I've been kind of promoting Nick Senzel for a long time. All the way in the minors, he hit everywhere. He had every marker of a guy that's gonna be productive in the major leagues. But man, it's not happening. And his numbers still this year, even after today's game. And again, six plate appearances, four hits, scored three runs, got an RBI, and walked twice. But his numbers are still not good. 221 average. We're just talking about 76 plate appearances on the season because he's been injured and sick as well, as usual. But 221 average, 274 on base, 309 slugging. I'm not suggesting it's time to give up on Nick Senzel. I hinted that way in our Slack channel yesterday, and he goes out and makes me look silly today. But, I mean, the reason I don't have any other options. Man, is this all he's going to be? Is Billy Hamilton like Billy Hamilton light, maybe? Oof. And if so, that's kind of Although we're not going to slander Billy Hamilton, but any thoughts on Nick Senzel? I was glad to see today. Hopefully that gets him going, I guess is all.
I think that he costs us $1.25 million this year. He's never had an extended, you know, span of time healthy. Let's just, you know, no expectations, but I'd love to see him have consistent plate appearances for about 3 months and then see what he can do. Because the guy, all he's ever done was hit the ball and hit the heck out of the ball. Something weird has happened since he's gotten the big leagues, whether it's injuries or it's in his head, I don't know, but consistent at bats to keep giving them to him. Maybe put him up in the leadoff spot more often and give him a lot of protection, but I am nowhere close to giving up on Nick Senzel, especially when he's going to keep playing gold glove caliber defense in center field.
I agree with Nate. I think that, you know, like you said, Chad, there aren't a lot of other options to throw out there in center field. I hope he is. There's no reason to believe he can't be the player we expected him to be. I'd be curious to know what's the most consecutive games he's played while healthy is in his time with the Reds. Because it doesn't seem like he's been able to stay healthy for 6 weeks. And the thing that scares me is anytime I see him go into the wall, dive for a ball, dive on the bases, you hold your breath. You honestly do. You wake up. You kind of close your eyes and open up and hope he's not holding his hand or holding his side or holding his arm or shoulder. And he just seems like he's made out of glass. And I'm not, you know, I don't want it to sound like I'm belittling the guy. When you're hurt, you're hurt. There's nothing you can do. But like Nate said, I'd love for him to stay healthy for, you know, 2 months, 3 months, and see what, assuming they give him the opportunity to play regularly. I'd like to see what his numbers look like then.
I was actually hopeful that was going to be this season because they don't have other options. That if he could just stay on the field, we were going to get 500 plus at bats from him. And finally, he's going to show us one way or the other who he is as a player. We can still hope for that, but I'm not going to bet the ranch on him staying healthy. And again, it's not. I'm not blaming him for that. It is what it is. He keeps getting hurt. He doesn't want to get hurt, I'm sure. If he does, that's kind of a weird thing. I'd like to understand the reasoning behind that. But that brings up one of our viewer mail questions. Go ahead and answer this right now. All these viewer mail questions, as you know, come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, where you too can join the family and support the pirate ship here. Kyle Kapler asks, you guys are probably going to strongly disagree with this take, but with Senzel's extensive injury history, what are your thoughts about giving him some looks in right field to keep him on the field? It scares me to see him slide or dive. Now, I'll just answer that first, and then you guys can weigh in however you want. It's kind of similar to what Bill was just now saying, which is every time he slides and dives, we cringe. I don't move him anywhere. And I would move him to third base if I were going to move him somewhere. I think he's got a better shot of staying healthier at third base than he does in center field. But if he's in the outfield, I want him in center field because he's the best outfielder they've got defensively. And he's legitimately one of the best defensive center fielders in all of baseball. So, you know, I don't think I'd move him anywhere else in the outfield. That's my thoughts. Nate, you want to jump in first?
Right field's too close to the wall. It's just scary having him over there so close. No, but also you get to have a similar conversation that we have had about Tyler Stevenson. You can hide a light hitting center fielder a lot better than you can hide a light hitting right fielder. So he just provides more value in the outfield in that spot.
That's true.
And I honestly don't, if you're trying to hide him from any possible injury, I don't see there being that big a damn difference between right field and center field.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe right field and third base. You could argue that he's not going to be doing as much diving, things like that, but yeah. So, sorry, Kyle, we do disagree, but it's an interesting topic of conversation. Some of the things that happened this week. We talked about Votto's game winner. We talked a little bit about Hunter Green, but we didn't talk about how he followed up that no-hit bid with – Bill just briefly mentioned it – with another absolute gem. Just love that. Nate, you got Graham Ashcraft. Mm-hmm. Made his big league debut. Finally, you've been talking about him here since your first day on this podcast, I think.
And showed everybody what I've been talking about. Yeah, the final line wasn't incredibly impressive, but I was fortunate enough to actually be able to watch the game. and his pitches just dance all over the zone. His fastball moves like a slider sometimes. I know he has a pretty sick slider too, releases it at the same arm angle as his fastball. I kind of think he has the potential to be one of those very rare starting pitchers that can get by on just two pitches, because his fastball doesn't move. I mean, it's got a ton of movement, but it doesn't move the same way consistently. Every fastball it can move in a different way. It can be like a cutter some pitches and then like a slider others. I thought he was awesome. He was attacking the zone. He's like a bulldog out there. He was going inside on guys. Yeah, he's going to walk a few people, but he was aggressive. And I love what they were saying on the broadcast, that Derek Johnson was just like, hey, man, we don't have enough time to get a full game plan. Just go do what you've been doing. Just go try to strike everybody out and just attack. And he did. I think it was super fun, and I think he deserves to be on the Major League roster.
He certainly acted like he belonged. He looked like he belonged. He also looks like a healthy young man. and that's all I'll say about that. The other news of the week, if you have anything to say about Ashcraft,
are you fat shaming?
No, don't say that. We're going to get canceled.
No shame.
Do not do that.
No shame. We're just fat acknowledging.
Exactly. I can't shame anyone.
I earned mine. I'm proud of mine.
Yeah.
This is body positivity. We love Graham Ashcraft.
Exactly, right? Exactly. And we may have to skip the Mike Moustakas questions coming later in viewer mail. Bill, I don't know if you have any thoughts, but maybe you do about Graham Ashcraft. But if not, maybe you have some thoughts about this. You know who else is back? We talked about Joey Votto. Aristides Aquino.
Oh.
Two home run game. What? Come on. Aquino is amazing again. Right? Right? Everyone.
And the Enquirer immediately ran an article that said he got his confidence back after being released.
Yeah. Got his confidence back.
I think this two-homer game brought his OPS to 484.
So. I wish him nothing, but I hope he does. I hope he becomes, you know, the guy we were hoping that we got that hot August a couple of years ago. He seems like a quality young man. He gives you everything he's got. Wanted to stay with the ball club even after he was released. Went to Louisville. And you know, I think, was it 2 weeks ago or something? I think you guys were talking about this, and he's the kind of guy you want in your organization, even if he doesn't help you at the big league level. He can help you in the minor leagues.
I wasn't saying that.
Somebody did. Maybe it was Jason. Yeah. Might have been Jason. I can't remember.
We were talking about that, and everything you're saying is the same thing we said when he was designated for assignment, Frank. Like, good guy, whatever. He just, you know. And none of that changed because he had a two home run game. I'm glad for him. I wish he has a thousand more of them because it helps the Reds, but. He is what he is. I don't think any differently about him than I did before. And I would also say that it wasn't that he wanted to stay with the Reds. My guess is he didn't have a lot of options. I can't imagine there were a lot of teams clamoring for his services when he was designated for assignment, but maybe there were. I don't know. Maybe
even if there was one, I mean, he made a decision between two.
I would be surprised if there were one.
Maybe. I wouldn't say,
but, Bill, bless you. That's what we'll say since we're talking about the gospel of Bill. Bill, bless you, Aristides Aquino, and wish you the best of luck. Bill Speed. I think that was really all in terms of on-the-field things to talk about this week. I guess other news. Before the Toronto series, Tyler Mahle, Brandon Drury, Joel Kunal, and Albert O'Mara Jr. were placed on the restricted list, and that's when the Reds called up Graham Ashcraft, Taylor Motter, Nate's favorite guy, Taylor Motter, I'm not sure he really actually exists, and Aristides Aquino. The worst news of the week, probably, Connor Overton.
No.
Connor Overton is hurt. And this is a bad thing. Connor Overton has been the Reds' best pitcher this season, basically. Got an MRI on his back, stress reaction in his back, and unable to throw for 6 to 8 weeks. We're talking 2 months. He was placed on the 60-day injured list.
I thought I saw something later that said they found a fracture.
Bill, I don't want to hear that.
Okay.
If he fractured his back, then that's tough.
That's probably not good. Either way, he's out for at least 2 months.
It is a really sad thing because, you know, the guy's finally getting an extended chance to pitch in the big leagues, and he's grabbing it, and he grabbed it. And you can't do any more than he did. And I don't know how this happened, whether it was part of, you know, something while he was pitching that this happened, or, you know, I have no idea. There's been nothing reported as to how this happened. So I'm assuming it happened on the mound. But you have to feel bad for the guy. You just have to. I mean, he was doing everything you could ask of him and more.
Yeah, the only thing I heard was like a day or two after his start, he just woke up and the pain was there. Like there wasn't anything they could point to. But we kind of touched on it an episode or two ago. He had this really, really interesting journey after getting drafted and kind of just stinking up the joint and then going back down playing in the independent league, getting a bunch of new pitches, changing his entire, you know, process. And then, like you said, he battled his way back and was just pitching fantastically. And then this happens after, I think, four starts. Yeah, you just hate to see it.
Yeah, it's just what a great story. And was this just a fluke that he was pitching so well in these handful of starts this year? Maybe. I mean, you know, maybe. We don't know. But this is a guy that was just basically done. And now he was finally, for the first time, actually living that that big league dream. And, man, just I hate it for him. So we got a ton of viewer mail questions to answer. So
question.
So before we do that, I'm going to let Bill ramble.
Question from the floor, Mr. Speaker.
I yield my time.
The guys that are all went on the restricted list. Did I read that these were all COVID vaccine things?
They're not allowed to say that.
But that's what it was.
That's what people presume.
Doesn't that give Toronto a tremendous advantage in terms of competition when teams could be having to put people on this restricted list when they come up there to play?
And I think that's why that snake in the grass, Justin Trudeau, has implemented that up there in Canada to give the Blue Jays an unfair advantage over American competition.
That sneaky bastard.
A little xenophobia here. Wow, that went a little far. Yikes.
Also, fair enough.
Yeah, I guess, but, you know, those guys could get the vaccine and go play. I mean, you know.
I'm not telling anybody to do anything. I'm just – It's almost as weird as the NBA's New York City's vaccine policy and the way it affected the Nets and the Knicks and nobody else, and it's also very odd to me.
Yeah, we could get way off topic diving into this one, but I'm gonna let Nate give the final word.
They just looked ahead. They saw an opportunity to get Graham Ashcraft his first big league start, and they took it. It was strategic.
Ooh, that's the answer. Justin Trudeau is a Graham Ashcraft fan.
And a Taylor Motter fan, apparently. He's the only one.
He's the one. All right, so one last thing. Do we need to talk more about how great Kyle Farmer was today and that he's just an amazing player?
Well,
my only concern is that his good game today is going to keep Barrero in AAA even longer.
And Barrero went out on a rehab stint. He's close to being back.
And he's playing short.
Yep. Kyle Farmer comes into the day with an OPS plus of 68. 68. He's been one of the worst players in all of Major League Baseball all season long. But if you look at my Twitter mentions, you wouldn't know it, because every time he gets a hit, everybody has to tell me that I was wrong about Kyle Farmer.
Well, that's only once a week, though.
That's true. I don't have... 1 month of the last two seasons, we've had to endure that consistently, and that's it.
But the other thing is, Barrero is not going to be up anytime soon because they said he's going to have. They're basically doing spring training for him in Louisville, so we're probably talking, you know, what, 4th of July.
Well, and I don't really have a problem with that necessarily. I mean, I think he's going to need some time to get ready because he really didn't have he's going to need some time to get game ready. I don't have an issue with it, but second half of the season, he needs to be starting at shortstop 6 days a week. Period. Sorry, Kyle Farmer. Sorry, Mrs. Farmer, if you're listening. You can play third base or wherever. I don't care where you play. But
yeah, look at the lineup. There's places for Kyle Farmer. He'll see the field.
Maybe second base if Jonathan India never comes back, although supposedly that's imminent.
So, what did they say the other day, 10 days to 2 weeks or something before he starts rehab? Yeah.
They said that 6 weeks ago.
Well, now you're besmirching the Reds medical staff.
No,
and I know you don't mean to do that.
No, they're perfect in every way. All right, viewer mail. Let's dive into it. Yeah, exactly. These questions come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. As we always said, first question today comes from our buddy Joseph Prince. His question is a very simple one. 2023 opening day lineup? Yes, there will be a lineup on opening day 2023.
Isn't it? Let's try to figure out who we think will be in, that's on this team now, will be in the lineup on opening day next year. Votto, Stevenson in India.
Well, let's go position by position. Catcher.
Thomas Garcia. Shoot.
First base.
Votto.
Colin Moran. Joey Votto. Second base, Jonathan India.
Yes.
After that, you're right, Bill. I don't think there's any other position that is guaranteed to be the starter.
Nope.
So I'm gonna be optimistic and say Barrero at shortstop.
I hope you're right.
Moustakas will be third. I mean, they're not going to be able to find anybody to take that contract. And he'll be around. I know, well, right?
He scored 20 runs today. Can I just have an hour?
Yes. And the outfield, I would not be surprised if none of the current outfielders are starting on opening day next year. Although, I guess Nick Senzel probably is your best bet.
Hey, I'm also here to say I'm really enjoying my Tommy Pham experience.
Yeah, but he's not going to be here. But yeah, I agree. I mean, he's been better since that horrific start. I don't have issues with him. I don't like the guy though.
But he's still got an OPS plus of 90. It's not like he's an all-star. Well, he may be the Reds all-star, but it's not like he's, you know, knocking down fences and you know, impressing the heck out of you. I mean,
but he started 0 for 58 or something like that for the season. And you can't deny, Bill, that he's better than Jesse Winker.
This year?
Winker's not started off very well, has he?
Not been great.
I don't think we can predict the opening day lineup next year because I think there's going to be at least three guys that are going to be, you know, minor league invites to spring training. I mean, I don't know. There's no one in the minor leagues other than Barrero that I see them pushing. McLean's too far away. Austin Hendricks just got promoted, but he's too far away. You know, the top shelf prospects in the minor leagues are not going to be here next year, other than, again, Barrero.
They're all in Daytona or Dayton. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there's a lot up in the air. And so what we really all need to do is just calm down, trust Nick Kroll.
Have faith. Faith.
Have some faith in Nick Kroll. Hey, Red scored 20 runs today.
Hello.
20 runs.
But I'm not the only one to think they probably now won't score any for like 3 days.
Bill, Nate asked for just an hour to enjoy this. 20 runs. The Reds are the league leader in runs
today.
Great. It's amazing. Kyle Farmer, best shortstop in baseball.
Today.
So I'm sorry we didn't answer your question there, Joseph. That's a tough one. Next comes from our friend Rex Scott. Rex tried to trick me into answering more than one question this week, but I think we will be able to get to one more of his questions. But first, let's answer this one. As we all know, the Reds have dealt with a ton of injuries this season. It's also obvious the team did not plan for sufficient depth on the roster to be able to cope with the extent of their injuries. Where on the roster did the Reds really fail when it came to planning for depth? Are there examples from other MLB teams of intelligent plans that help those teams to deal with injuries? Every team that wants to compete expects that there are going to be injuries. The Reds are the only team that has a paper-thin roster and goes into the season hoping that they're – well, not only the Reds. I mean, the Pirates, other garbage organizations will put together this paper-thin – and we've seen it so many times over the last few years. Starting lineup that you can kind of squint and see that they'd be okay, but they depend completely on the lineup being completely healthy all season long, and they never are. And what we always say, hope is not a strategy. The Reds hope that they stay healthy. So where they failed was they traded off or got rid of a number of legitimate productive major leaguers and made no attempt to replace them other than an emergency signing of Tommy Pham. It's just, I don't know who else you want to compare it to. And I don't know why you want to compare it. It's a garbage way to run any professional sports organization. And you can't defend it. But on the other hand, I guess what you can say about it is they scored 20 runs today. So maybe it worked.
They have to adjust their resources to payroll. And wasn't that the quote?
Or is 20 that runs, Bill. 20 runs.
And a week from today, we'll say 24 runs this week.
They scored 5 against the Blue Jays. We can remember that.
Well, we were talking about the Blue Jays series earlier a little bit. Even though we lost two out of three, I think, right? Did we lose 2 out of 3 up there?
Yeah.
The pitching was good.
It was great.
The whole series. So, you know, you gotta be happy about what you can be happy about with this team.
If nothing else, they're more competitive these days than they were in those early days of the season, and that's, I guess, fun. It's something.
I'll be honest, and I think Jason or Chris, I can't remember which one, I struggle to watch this team. I usually try to watch when Hunter Green's pitching, and when Lodolo's back on the mound, I will probably try to make an effort to watch. But I haven't made it through 9 innings of any game yet this year, I don't think. This team is hard to watch. They really are.
I think, at least in my opinion, all of that changes if Joey Votto is really back. If I get to tune in and watch him play at a high level, sign me up.
Well, and maybe, like you said, Votto, and you get India back, and maybe get Barrero at shortstop, and if Senzel's hitting.
It's interesting, at least, all of a sudden, right? Yeah.
Well, it's not a bunch of guys that you've never heard of before.
Are we getting ready to slander Colin Moran and Brandon Drury and Jake Fraley again, Bill? Come on.
Who?
Taylor Motter.
Who?
We can slander Taylor Motter. I'll stand.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
And there's still the worst defensive team I've ever seen. Other than Senzel.
Doesn't matter if he scored 20 runs.
That's true.
Nathan Connor.
As long as the other team doesn't make that extra point, you're still going to get a win.
There you go. Nathan Connor goes a little bit of a different direction with the Tyler Stevenson moving positions question. Here's his question. A lot of folks seem to want to preserve Tyler Stevenson by moving him from catcher. With the Reds front office going with the quote-unquote Rays model, first of all, Nathan, there is zero evidence that they're going with a Rays model other than the fact that Nick Kroll or somebody said that one time. There's no actual evidence of any decision they've made that mimics anything the Rays are doing. None. But anyway, we'll presume that for the sake of the question. If they go with that model, we should and maybe they are going to in the future go with that model because they did say that. But if they do, then we should expect fewer, if any, long-term contracts for guys past 30 and a few offers to buy out arbitration years plus a couple free agent years. Having said that, what's the point of moving Stevenson away from his premium position if he's likely going to be playing for another team in 10 years anyway? Wouldn't you rather him continue catching where he played in the minors and raking there as the top catcher in the league? And I think it's an interesting point. Have faith, says Bill. I don't. There's a lot of reasons I don't move Tyler Stevenson. That's one of them. I mean, if the argument is we got to protect his, save his knees from catching, well, that's going to be a question for 33-year-old Tyler Stevenson, and he's probably not going to be here at that point. If it's because of the concussions, those are fluke things that happened this year. He has had 3 concussions, so that's a concern. You have to be concerned about it. But both times, there's a foul ball, and he's changing his helmet. He's using the old school face mask. He's going to change the one that protects more. And the other one's a collision to the plate. We just don't see collisions to the plate anymore. Very, very rare. So,
and a head slam onto the ground.
Right. A dirty play, yeah, out there against San Diego. So I think it's a good point, Nathan. I really do. I think that are we saving him so that he can be a productive catcher for the Cardinals in 10 years? Screw that. Nate?
I hadn't thought of it the way that this was thought of, and I think it's a real interesting perspective.
Yeah, it's a good question, but I think unless Tyler Stevenson or his doctors, the team doctors, advise and say that he needs to not be a catcher, then he stays a catcher as long as he wants.
Well, and part of it that people aren't really understanding is he's actually not a bad defensive catcher. He's got a gun. He hired a coach to work with him on his, and you can watch, if you look at the videos of his catching stance this year versus last year when runners are on base, completely different. That's why he's throwing people. He's already thrown out as many runners, maybe more at this point than he threw out all of last year. And he's not a terrible defensive catcher. He's not Tucker Barnhart, but who is? I mean, you know, we can't expect that. But he's getting better, and he's perfectly cromulent behind the plate. And so if you got a guy like that can be an elite hitter, you just don't move him. You just don't move him.
Cromulent?
Yeah, go look that up, Bill.
I'm going to have to look that one up. The only thing I will say on his defense is he does seem to have trouble with the balls down in the dirt. A fair number of balls seem to get by him to me. Wild pitches, and I don't know what his pass ball count is. But
well, when you have the Graham Ashcrafts of the world thrown to you, you're going to miss a few balls.
That's true. Yeah, no, I'm not saying he's a gold glover, but I think he's good enough that the defense is not the reason to move him. You know, if he were the worst catcher in the league, you might say, oh, well, we got to get him out of there.
And I think I said this when we talked about this last week or whenever it was. I do worry about the concussions because, you know, they say once you start getting them, they're easier to get as you move along. And that's a concern, not only for baseball, but for his well-being in the long run.
Yeah, if he gets another one, especially sometime soon, he just might have to move just for his own long-term health. But I don't think we're there. The other reason why I say there's no reason to move him right now is that what are you going to do? Who are you going to put there? The Reds don't have another single major league catcher on the roster. They don't have anyone that's talented enough to be a regular major league catcher. Now, they could have spent a couple bucks and brought Tucker Barnhart back, but go ahead, Nate. What?
That's how we get Kyle Farmer those at-bats.
Boom. Ah.
Then he'll be the greatest catcher out there.
Exactly, according to his Twitter sweethearts. That's a great question, Nate. Next question comes from Joe Farsing. This is one we probably do need to unpack a little bit. Joe Farsing says, hot take. Tyler Mahle is more useful as a trade asset than as a starter. Agree or be wrong, he says. Tyler Mahle. I think we have to say at this point that this season has not gone for Tyler Mahle the way any of us thought it would. Through 10 starts, he has a 2-5 record, a 6.32 ERA, and while some of his advanced metrics don't look quite that bad, he's just been bad this season. And I thought this year, you know, Tyler Mahle, he's 27 years old. I really thought this was going to be the year where he was the breakout, and especially with Castillo being hurt early, I said, here he's going to be the ace of the team, or at least develop into a solid number two starter. After a great season last year, I don't know. I still like the guy. He's got talent, but I'm not sure I'm ready to drop money on him for a contract extension. I'm not sure what his trade value is at the moment, but Joe might be right. Bill, what do you think?
I'm not giving up on Tyler Mahle after a third of a bad season when he's got a track record either. His trade value now, it would be just like the Reds to trade him when his value is at its lowest. But I'm not ready to sign him to a long-term contract either. You just have to see how the rest of the season goes. He's going out there every fifth day, and you hope he gets better.
Nate?
If you're going to trade him, I hope you highlight and emphasize his home road splits.
That's the thing that I can't understand still. It's not changed. You could talk yourself into thinking it was a fluke last year, but my goodness, it's a consistent thing. He can't pitch at Great American Ballpark.
Which is a problem when you play for the Reds.
But
it comes up.
If they trade him to the Cardinals, every time he comes to town and pitches against the Reds,
he'll throw two hitters.
Yeah, 4D chess. I like this.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not ready to give up on him. I'm not ready to trade him. He's just 27 years old. He has a long track record of getting batters out. But yikes, he has not looked right all season long. And at this moment, actually, I'm going to disagree with your question, Joe. So I guess I'm wrong in your mind. I think he's more useful as a starter. But for the last 10 starts, he's not been useful at all. Patrick Hasler asks, how are you gents enjoying this season compared to previous sub-500 years? I've enjoyed not having expectations around this team after the atrocious start instead of hoping they can stick into the playoffs. It's been more fun seeing each win while watching the few bright spots perform well. Patrick, that is what I would call a glass half full of perspective, and I applaud you for it. Kudos, young man. Kudos. This season has been fun only in the sense that, as Nate and I have talked a lot about, I'm trying really hard to find things to laugh about. And they're available. But even the things I've liked over the last few years, like Joey Votto, he's not been around this season. no, I'm not really enjoying this from a baseball perspective. Although I got to say, it's on every night here. It's always on my second screen. I'm rarely, you know, watching it as intently as I used to, but it's still on here for some reason. So what do you all think? Have more fun than the other 90 lost seasons? It's all misery to me.
This is the first one where I am regularly getting to hang out with you folks in the Patreon community and talk about baseball in that way. So I'm having fun in that regard. And hey, we're only 10 and a half games back from the wild card spot. So keep the spirits high, these fans.
Now that's
and they scored 20 runs.
And they scored 20
runs.
That
is glass half.
They do that every game. They'll probably win some.
That's probably true. And as I said earlier, I've really struggled being interested in this team. And another, for instance, right here in my house, my wife is a big baseball fan, big Reds fan. And there hasn't been one time when she said, aren't the Reds playing? Let's put the ball game on. Not once.
Yeah. I'll say to echo what Nate said. Well, first of all, a lot of people have tuned out. If you watch the Cubs series, there was no one there. There weren't even many Cubs fans as usual. It was nobody in the stadium. But I actually met up with one of our Patreon family yesterday. Tip of the cap to Rich. And that's something he said was that, you know, man, if it weren't for the Patreon group and the Slack channel and, you know, this podcast, just being able to watch it. And, he said, listen on my bike ride, I guess, every Friday morning. I'd be disconnected right now. And so I think, there's something that misery loves company, you know, so that gives us a little bit of enjoyment maybe. But the team's been pretty brutal to watch. Although there are things, you know, Hunter Green is fun to watch, you know. That's about it. But Tyler Stevenson and Hunter Green, that's about it. Brian Bowdy, this is a great question. This is just a great question. What would Joey Votto and Pete Rose's careers look like if they swapped generations Freaky Friday style? How would Joey's career be different if he played in the 60s and 70s? And how would Pete have done in the modern game? Now, my short answer to this is, Joey Votto would be considered an inner circle Hall of Famer already. And Pete Rose would be borderline because of what's valued now versus what is valued then. That's my quick and short answer. But Bill, I like to hear your thoughts on this because you watch Pete play quite a bit. Can you imagine Joey Votto in the 70s era? Is his game different? You know, it's hard to say that. But if he put up the same numbers back then,
It's hard to grasp how Joey's skill set would have fit in that era. You know, would he have done what he did last year and adjust his game to fit in more with the way the game was played then? You know, speed, less strikeouts, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, looking at their numbers, you know, if Pete quits playing when he should have in 79 or 80, his numbers are a lot different than you look at the end. And I'm not trying to compare who's better or that, but you know, in Pete's era, he, what did I look here? He had 10 top 10 finishes in the MVP race in his career. And Joey's not even close to that, which just tells you that, like, the difference in skill sets for the eras.
I think that flips. If Joey's in the 70s, I think Joey gets it. And if Pete's now, Pete's never making a top 10.
Right. I agree with you. I agree with you. This is a really interesting question. I think we talked about this a little last week. You think Joey hits third on the Big Red Machine. Isn't that what you, I think that's what you said last week.
I think you can make an argument.
Yeah.
They'd be at third. I'd say third or fifth.
I think he's hitting fifth behind Foster. Yeah.
Question. What was that? Twitter.
Oh, go ahead, Nate.
If Pete Rose was on the 2022 Cincinnati Reds, would you want to start him over Kyle Farmer?
Twitter probably question? Yes. Twitter likes Pete Rose as much as they like.
Yeah, fair enough. Same fans.
That's the reason. That's another reason the Votto and Rose question are so interesting, because Twitter doesn't like Votto either. So
that's true. That's true. This is what we could probably spend. TikTok does. We could probably spend an hour kind of debating the ins and the outs of this question. It's a fascinating question. Maybe it's about to need to be an off-season topic. You know, let's take different players from the last 25 years and project whether what they could have done with the Big Red Machine. You know, what would Adam Dunn's role have been on the Big Red Machine?
Put Eric Davis in center field.
Oh, put Eric Davis in center field, and they are the best team in the history of baseball. They're arguing that already.
A healthy prime of his, you know, of his career, Eric Davis in center field. I mean, he's every bit the defensive player that Geronimo was. And, you know, he brings at least as much to the table, more speed. I don't know if he had, if Eric had a great arm, but I don't know if he had the Geronimo arm. But the bat was, you know, 25 times better than Geronimo. There, you know, Concepcion's the only out in the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the 1987 Eric Davis is as good a baseball player as I'm ever going to see in my life. I just wish we could have had a whole career of that. Yep. So good question, Brian. Nate, any thoughts about that before we go? Freaky Friday, Joey Votto and Pete Rose?
No, thank you, Dale. The 70s would be a lot more kind to Joey Votto than the 2000 teens would be to Pete Rose.
Well said.
James Urban. James, I'm sorry, buddy. You know we love you, but this is a silly question for a reason I'm getting ready to say. Who wins, the Reds or our beer league softball team? At this point, I think we may have them beat. James, the Reds scored 20 runs today. Our softball team has never scored 20 runs in a game. Not once.
Never. We drank 20 beers.
Bill drank 20 beers per game.
Well, that's the question. What's the competition? Are we playing baseball or softball, or are we seeing who can drink the most beers? Because we got a ringer up there, the Podfather.
We may have an advantage there. I'm trying to think which Red. Well, again, we're getting into Mike Moustakas territory. I'm not going to talk about which Red would like to pound beers the most.
I'm getting ready. You know, I got to go into training here because I'm getting ready to go to Key West here in a couple of weeks. So.
Okay. You know, gotta get prepared, huh?
Gotta get my training regimen up.
Thomas Dennis asks, was Dick Williams the best Reds general manager since Bob Housem? And does Kroll's bad performance reflect upon our evaluation of Williams? Was Dick Williams the best GM since Bob Housem? I don't think
Murray,
you can say that.
Big Murray Cook guy myself.
Ah, Murray Cook. There you go.
Legend.
He was in the Marge era, right? Marge had what three GMs in her time period?
Murray Cook, Bob Quinn, I think.
Bob Quinn, who ended up running the ball club after she got suspended. Wasn't Burgish? Yeah, Bill Burgish.
Yeah. Well, I think wasn't Jim Bowden at the end of her time too?
Could have been. I don't know. It was all a blur. It was all smoke filled blur.
I don't know how great Dick Williams was as a general manager. I do know that if he had been given support from ownership, and you can't, you know, he's part of the ownership. So, you know, maybe I'm blaming him too, since his family are minority owners. I think the Reds team, the last 2 years and this year, are competing for National League pennants. I really do. I mean, they were there. They were right there. So in that respect, you have to say he was pretty good.
I kind of agree with what you're saying. And if nothing else, you have to give him credit for convincing ownership, at least for this long, to turn this into a major league franchise, to start doing things that everybody else has been doing for years. Of course, that lasted till he was out the door, and then all that stuff got ejected. So,
well, he made mistakes. Yes, he wasn't perfect, and I think we give him a lot of credit because he was the first general manager in a long time that actually – seemed like he had a clue, was willing to bring the Reds into the 21st century. I mean, you can make arguments for Walt Jocketty. I won't make those arguments. You can make arguments for Jim Bowden. I mean, Jim Bowden is basically Nick Kroll. I mean, in terms of what he's dealing with ownership. But Bowden was able to find a little bit more success at times than what you ever would expect Kroll to have. Maybe Dick Williams is the best because he was saddled with Nick Kroll all these years, and maybe that's why we should give Williams credit. What do you think, Nate? You're going to stick with Murray Cook?
I think that if we are remembering Dick Williams a little more fondly because of the Nick Kroll stank, then let's let that reflect on Nick Kroll more than it does Dick Williams.
The Nick Kroll Stank. That's a good name for a band.
New band name.
Yeah. The Nick Kroll Stank. Remind me that we're going to name this episode the Nick Kroll Stank.
Done. Can't get Kroll Stank off our podcast.
No. Joey Gaditza.
Keep your Nick Gaditza Kroll Stank to yourself.
What's that, Bill?
Keep your Nick Kroll Stank to yourself.
Oof. 20 runs.
Ooh.
Joey Gaditza asks, gents, who is going to win Lord Stanley's Cup? I don't want to touch anyone's cup. What's he talking about? I don't know who Stanley is, and I don't want to touch his cup.
Tampa Bay Lightning.
I'll go Colorado Avalanche. Oh,
hockey?
If I have to pick it.
So we are talking hockey. All right, I'm going to go with the New York Islanders. Is that an option?
The Virginia sure. Cavaliers? You want to pick the Hoos?
The Cincinnati Stingers.
I thought the Islanders were going to have a chance this year. Said they fired their coach.
I'm a big Mighty Ducks guy. I think Gordon Bombay is going to lead them to the title. Charlie Conway and Adam Banks, they're elite. Julie the Cat Gaffney in the goal.
Ooh. Julie the Cat Gaffney.
I'm excited about that squad.
I'm going to go. The last couple years, I got back into hockey because for whatever reason, I'm a New York Islanders fan. And I was excited for this year. And then they faded early. And I was like, I don't like this. I don't have enough time in my day to devote to a bad team other than the Reds.
You got to
guess Georgetown Hoyas basketball.
You got to limit your bad teams to one.
Right. I don't have enough time for that. So, but I'm going to go with Carolina Hurricanes. That's what I'm going for.
The Hurricanes? Yeah.
The Hurricanes, because I got a buddy that is a big Hurricanes fan, and he's going to be upset that I call him the Hurricanes. So, really the answer is anyone but the Rangers, please, for the love of Bill, anyone but the New York Rangers.
We can all agree on that.
Never root for me.
Yeah, really. Seth Shaner, what percentage of being a Reds fan is just the ingrained love of baseball and nostalgia for time with fathers and grandfathers? The depressing nature of the lack of a plan from ownership and management causes me to waver in my dedication. But then the game starts and my grandpa calls to talk about it, and I remember why I'm a fan in the first place. I think this has been baseball's biggest advantage from a marketing perspective for years that they're not going to have in the next generation because they've given up on the last generation or two of fans. But man, for me, that's part of it. I mean, that's for a lot of us. It's just, it's father, grandfather. That's who got me into the game, I guess. But more, it's just that the game has always been on in the background in my life. It's like I call it the soundtrack to my life. It's always been there in the background. The Reds have, and so they're still there. So that's nostalgia, I guess. Nate?
Yeah, I think hit the nail on the head. I love what you said about how they're not going to have that sort of marketing advantage for long. You think about the biggest thing they've really done in the last several years of these Field of Dreams games. And, I mean, do your kids care about Field of Dreams? Like,
oh, that's marketed at me.
To one specific nation or two, and they need to be captured.
I agree with Chad. I think it's a nostalgia. For me, it's a nostalgia and a historical thing. A lot of my, and I've told stories on here about going to the ballpark with my grandpa when I was younger and growing up in the era of the Big Red Machine. And I think, Chad, you've made this point from the Reds perspective a number of times about the lost generation of Reds fans. And I think that's what we're talking about here, too, because they don't have any of this historical or nostalgia to fall back on. Nobody's nostalgic about losing 100 games. And unless they turn this franchise around soon, they're going to be looking at empty ballparks for years and years and years.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing this year with attendance is the tip of the iceberg.
13,000 today. I just looked.
Yeah, and of course, it's a midweek day game, so sometimes you get those light attendance numbers. But it's been that way this whole series, and I don't know, I desperately miss going to Great American Ballpark, and it's just that nostalgia thing. And I like hanging out at the ballpark and watching a game and having a drink and some peanuts. And it's just fun. But you know what? There are a lot of ballparks where I can do that around this country. And Nate and I were going to go to one the other night until rain changed our plans because I like hanging at the ballpark. Hanging out at specifically Great American Ballpark is no longer, well, it's actually at the bottom of my list until Castellini's gone. When he's gone, I'll be back, and I can't wait. But I'm not sure when or if that'll happen. And, yeah, I just I do worry about the future of baseball, and I worry about the future of the Reds specifically because what have the Reds given anyone to care about for the last 20 years? Nothing.
A tease every now and again.
Every now and again.
Have faith. Have faith, guys.
That's a good question, though, Seth. Yeah, got to have some faith. Where are you going to go? Rex Scott asks about a second question here, and he's really being insistent here. I'm getting a little irritated at Rex Scott. Here's what he says. I already asked a question, but I just thought about the fact that I still don't have a roster spot on the Beer League softball team. Chad put me on the hoops team when I joined last year. When I brought this up last time, Chad was off for the week, and the other guys didn't want to place me in his absence. So, Rex, I mean, why are you trying to annoy us, man? Dude, you are the superstar of the basketball team. But okay,
greedy.
If you insist.
Greedy.
Yeah, Rex. Not, greedy, he wants more than one question this week. And in that second question, he's complaining. I mean, what does he think this family is? We don't complain to this family. We love each other. It's all about love. All right, Rex. You are our starting pitcher, flamethrower, if you can flamethrow in slow pitch beer league softball, and you are hitting cleanup in the lineup. Is that good enough for you? Are you going to complain some more, Rex Scott? Just kidding, Rex. Love you, baby.
No, sorry if you complain. You're the ball boy and the bat boy. You have to pick up all the equipment and go out and get the bases after the game and put them in the bag. And carry him to the bus, and you don't get any beer out of the half barrel.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, come on, Bill. Come on.
I'm a tough taskmaster now.
God. I mean, he might have the best name on the Beer League softball team. Rex Scott strikes fears into the opposing.
See, I think he's a power-hitting first baseman if we play him, if we go by the name. I think that's a power-hitting first baseman name.
Yeah, when he doesn't pitch, you can do both.
Then he can pick up the bases after the game.
He's the best player on the team. Yeah, by far the superstar. And not only that, two-sport superstar, basketball superstar as well. Rex is just – you're amazing. He's an amazing specimen of athletic ability. We're so lucky to have him on our team. What do you think, Rex? Is that good enough? All right, last question comes from our buddy Rich Thompson. Rich asks – over the course of the last couple, and again, I apologize because we're talking too much about people who maybe are differently shaped.
Rounds of shape.
That's right. Over the course of the last couple seasons, many in the Red Leg Nation family have noticed and commented that Mike Moustakas appears to be a bit huskier and not in a good way. However, I do not think that he rivals some former Reds that might have been challenged to find some extra holes in their belt straps. Here is my list of former Reds with wider girths. A, Donnie Scott. B, Jumbo Diaz. C, Jonathan Broxton. D, Dimitri "The Meat Hook" Young. And E, Todd Coffey. In your opinion, who takes the title of most rotund Red? That's really not very nice, Rich. Come on.
I don't even remember Donnie Scott.
I barely do. What do you think? Give me a name, guys.
Dimitri, the meat.
I wanted to go Jumbo because it had to be Jumbo Diaz, right? But
current Jumbo Diaz for sure.
Oh, that's true. But then I thought Todd Coffey. Remember Todd Coffey? Sprint to the mound.
Sweating profusely.
Oh, just sweating like crazy. It was disgusting. Todd Coffey. Bill, you got an answer?
Donnie Scott. I just looked him up. He pitched for the Reds in 91. He was 5'11", 185 pounds. So that's not heavy.
What was the name of the guy? Oh, man, I can't remember his name now. His nickname was the Big Sweat. Big Sweat.
I don't know, but I would probably have to go with Jonathan Broxton. He was a big boy.
The Big Sweat.
Somebody needs to tell you who that guy was. He was a big old boy. I'm going to go with Todd Coffey, and here's why. Because this week, a couple weeks ago, or a few weeks ago, We played a little bit of a rant from one of the golf podcasters, this No Laying Up podcast, if you've heard that, and they're a great group of guys. But anyway, one of the guys this week, they were talking, they were wrapping up the PGA Championship, which was a fun major championship. Golf is just a great spectator sport. But anyway, they were kind of great finish. They were wrapping it up, and they were kind of going down the leaderboard and talking about guys that didn't make the cut and guys that didn't do well. And they got to John Rahm. Y'all know John Rahm, great golfer. Mm-hmm. But the same guy that did the rant on the other one said, the two guys that were on that rant on the previous one, one said to the other, "Wait a minute, didn't you used to compare John Rahm to sweaty Todd Coffey?"
Wow.
Because they were talking about that he's not in the best shape either. And so we got a Todd Coffey mention on the No Laying Up podcast. But anyway, I apologize for all that talk because I'm in horrible shape myself. I'm not making fun of anyone.
Round's a shape.
Round is a shape. Guys, that's a pretty good place to put a wrap in it, I think. What do you think? Any final thoughts, Bill?
One more question. I didn't get to see much of the Toronto series. But did neither one of our color guys make the trip? We didn't have Chris or Barry up there, right? Wasn't that LeCure doing that game? Those games?
LeCure was up there, yeah. Yeah. I don't know about the Sunday game because I was listening to that one on the radio as I was driving. So I'm not sure who was doing television.
Did Barry and Chris not want to go to Canada, maybe? Sam, this was yours.
Maybe they're on the Tyler Naquin list. I don't know.
Maybe.
Who knows? Any final questions or thoughts, Nate?
Not really. I mean, 20 runs. Just keep that up, Kyle Farmer. Just keep being the GOAT, and we can have a fun final few months.
If we score 20 a game, we'll be in good shape.
The Reds scored 20 runs.
In one day.
One game.
I'm pretty sure we went a week earlier in the season when we didn't score 20 runs.
Bill, we're not talking about the past. You're too stuck in the past. Okay, we're talking about the now, where the Reds average 20 runs a game. On this date in Reds history, the Reds averaged 20 runs a game, and I won't listen to anyone slander them. This is the Riverfront, episode number 426. Thank you for listening. We always appreciate all the support. We're at youtube.com/riverfrontcincy. If you're watching us on YouTube, go ahead and give us a like down there. And please, 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 please smash that subscribe button, okay? It helps us get in front of more eyes. The more you like, the more you subscribe, and the more you tell your friends. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook, at Riverfront Cincy. You can also find the podcast in audio format the same way you've always found it. At all your favorite podcast apps, go look, search for The Riverfront, and you will find us. If you want to join the family, patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. We'd love to have you. We're having a blast over there talking about the Reds. I guess the one last thing I'll say is if whatever service you watch us on gives you a chance to rate or review, do that. Give us 5 stars, nothing less than 5 stars, 5 stars only. If you like us, tell your friends about us. If you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. Gang, this was a fun one. I'll give you one last chance to make a final statement. Bill.
I have no final statement.
Nate.
Welcome back, Joey Votto.
Welcome back, Joey Votto. For Nate Dotson, for the Podfather, Bill Lack, and for sweaty, sweaty Todd Coffey, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.